tomorrow at 9. We're going to start our once a week sessions. First, we're going to start getting the issues on the table. Is this?
Good afternoon, everybody. It is Wednesday, 2 p.m., June 6, 2012, and the City Council will come to order. Carla, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good lunch?
Yes.
Good. Can you please call the roll?
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Leonard?
Here.
Fritz? Adams?
Here. We have a couple of very special time certains, beginning with the 2 p.m. time certain. Can you please read the title for item number 664?
Portland's Nine Sister City Associations.
Mr. Siegel, Director Siegel, if you'd please come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Noah Siegel. I'm the Director of International Affairs for the City of Portland. And among my responsibilities, I work with Portland's nine sister city associations. And they're a busy but quiet bunch. So on this Rose Festival week, we thought we would take the opportunity to remind everyone of what they're doing, and both day-to-day, year-to-year, but also especially on this week. Just a little bit of background. The Sister City program was initiated in 1956 by President Eisenhower to create an international atmosphere of understanding and respect. It was inspired by the post-war spirit that people who knew each other would be less likely to kill each other. And I'm happy to report that Portland has not fought any wars with any of its sister cities since establishment.
What a mission statement. Job well done.
Absolutely. But we have one of the oldest sister city relationships in the world, but founded in 1959 with Sapporo, and eight additional sister cities since then. We'll have an opportunity to hear briefly from each of those sister cities today. In addition, we have a very active group in town trying to create a new sister city with Utrecht in the Netherlands around things like bicycling and sustainability. So this remains a very active spirit among Portlanders, and has permeated and led to all sorts of transformative things in our city, many of which you're familiar with, like the Chinese Garden and the Dragon Boat races, but also many quieter things like educational exchanges between our schools, Portland State University, cultural exchanges, and business leads. Oftentimes, our sister city relationships are sort of our calling card when we get to China or Taiwan or Japan. To recognize that we've been committed to their country for a very long time. One thing I just would like to make note of before turning it over to my colleagues in the sister cities is that it's really one of the most important aspects of our sister city associations is that they are entirely volunteer. They are affiliated with the city but receive no direct funding from the city. This is in marked contrast to some of our partner cities. Mayor and I were in Suzhou last year and discovered that they had a staff of 31 people working on sister city relationships. Lots of government officials, very few citizens. So this is entirely citizen driven in Portland. And we thank the commissioners for the times that they've appeared at events or supported the sister cities in the past, and hopefully will continue to do so. I'd like to introduce you to Lynn McIntyre, who's with the Portland Suzhou Sister City Association, but also with the Royal Rosarians, and has been coordinating the Rose Festival activities this week, just to give a brief overview of how sister cities are enriching the Rose Festival.
Thank you very much, Mayor Adams, commissioners, and guests. One of the things that's happened since Noah Siegel started working with us is that we've had an opportunity to expand and do some things that are collaborative, which has made each of our individual organizations stronger. By working together, we've developed friendships, problem-solving methods, we've found means of getting funding, and this afternoon you are all invited to attend the Sister City reception from 4 to 5:30 p.m. downstairs, which will host four visiting Rose Festival delegations. Now, those delegations are visiting here as part of a partnership with the Rose Festival Foundation and also Regents Cambia Healthcare Systems, who last year, for the first time since we started working on these projects, offered us the opportunity to have a Nine Sister Cities float in the Grand Floral Parade. It gave us visibility that we never had before. There just wasn't an opportunity, and for some organizations, it is so important to have that visibility. It's helped us all. It's increased the numbers of our members. It's increased our visibility, and we are grateful for that, and we hope to continue along that route, along with helping each other develop and supporting each other as support can be useful. The Royal Rosarians have become a very important part of that. We're very happy to be working with the sister cities and doing what we do best, which is to serve as the official ambassadors of the city of Portland to its guests and visitors. My personal sister city, Suzhou, has the pleasure of having an art exhibit at the Performing Arts Center right next door to the Schnitzer Concert Hall. And if you were to go there today up through the 8th of June, you'd be able to see many beautiful examples of original artwork on the walls. I encourage you to do that. And the council clerk also has a list of accomplishments for our organization that will be provided to you for your inspection. Thank you.
Thank you. And just one thing you'll notice that each of the sister city associations has a really unique flavor to it and involves itself in really different activities, one from the other. So that's why we decided to take the opportunity to allow one short presentation from each sister city association today. So, Mac?
And I'm here representing the Portland-Kaohsiung Sister City Group, formalized in 1988. The Portland-Kaohsiung Sister City Association selected the ancient tradition of dragon boat races to expand the cultural awareness between the two cities. In its 24th year, the dragon boat races have become a premier sanctioned event of the Portland Rose Festival, adding to the positive economic impact that the city recognizes. This year, we have 76 teams registered, ranging from local high school teams to several out-of-town teams. The races have actually evolved beyond our initial vision of the cultural awareness. The theme now includes a wellness piece, a leadership and team building, and for some teams, it's a celebration of life. For the first time this year, we're going to actually have a special race focusing on local heroes. On Sunday, we'll have the fire department racing against the Coast Guard, and hopefully next year we'll be able to include the Navy in that and hopefully have that become an expansion of Fleet Week when they come here.
By the way, the Coast Guard doesn't have a chance, but let's also remember, they control the bridges.
I control the clock.
Let's make sure it's, you know, not too big a win.
Okay. Yeah.
Don't embarrass them. They just beat them.
This year, the city of Kaohsiung is presenting to us two additional new dragon boats, which actually arrived here last Thursday. And beyond the dragon boat races, there are annual delegation visits and exchanges. This year, the delegation from Kaohsiung is being led by Mayor Chen. She is scheduled to arrive here on Friday, bringing a delegation of 40 city elected officials and staff. And they're set to participate in the Grand Floral Parade, but we have made sure there's plenty of time for them for sightseeing and shopping, which is really important. Another important element of the relationship with Kaohsiung is the Shuta High School. They will be here, and they're actually arriving this afternoon. 40 students, 10 staff members. They will be performing again in the Grand Floral Parade and will be actually performing for the fifth grade classes at David Douglas High School. And on Monday, we'll be performing for the local community and all their host families. In the past, I know Noah's been involved with Kaohsiung. They've looked at mass transit, green environment, and restoration of rivers and have been in conversation with the city. Our future focus, building on our current foundation, is expanding on additional economic opportunities between the two cities, and we appreciate your continued support.
Thank you. Thank you both.
I had a mixture of pride and embarrassment that I was a member of the original Dragon Boat teams 24 years ago, and then since I've arrived on council, the one sister city visit I made was to Kaohsiung, and I just could not have been just more honored and flattered with the treatment that I received in Kaohsiung. I was just absolutely, completely taken back by what a great city, and the mayor and the council and the people were of Kaohsiung. It was just a fabulous experience.
Thank you. There's probably going to be room on the boat for Sunday's race.
Well, if you heard me at the swearing-in of the new fire chief yesterday, she ran into the ground, and I'll just do my slow plotting from now on. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, man.
Welcome.
안녕하세요. 제 이름은 하정석입니다. Hello, my name is Karen Ha-Chi, and I have the pleasure of representing the sister city of Ulsan, South Korea. 25 years ago, my father, Dr. Joseph Ha, with Mayor Bud Clark and a delegation from Portland made the initial trip to Ulsan, establishing the sister city relationship with great hope and warm friendship. Ulsan was a natural choice. It is a powerhouse port city home to three major industries, Hyundai Automobile Manufacturing, Hyundai Heavy Industries, and Petrochemical Companies. Portland immediately became the primary gateway for all Hyundai cars shipped into the United States. The very first Hyundai car to ever touch American soil arrived in 1987 from Busan, which I clearly remember because it was my first car as a newly licensed teen. I crashed it later, but we won't talk about that. I'm living, so that's perfect. We've recently formed a brand new steering committee with great aspirations to refresh our relationship with Ulsan. We've secured tremendous support from many business leaders and community groups. Ulsan is currently experiencing a green movement and an arts renaissance. The steering committee is pursuing building ecotourism and ecology exchanges, farm-to-table food, wine, and beer tourism, as well as business development, continuing educational, arts, and cultural exchanges. As a matter of fact, the 90-member Ulsan Philharmonic Orchestra will be performing tonight at the Orleans Schnitzer Concert Hall as a gift from the city of Ulsan. The concert is completely sold out, and the community has just embraced these musicians that have come into town. We also hope to hold goodwill matches between the Portland Timbers and the Ulsan Hyundai Tigers. Soccer is a big culture in Ulsan. The Portland-Ulsan Sister City Steering Committee has tremendous energy and enthusiasm to build opportunities to benefit, bind, and enrich both cities. We're looking forward to the next 25 years to be even more spectacular. Thank you.
And Mayor Park from Ulsan arrives this afternoon in 1 hour.
Great. Hi, welcome.
Hello. Hi, I'm Philip Potestio from Portland Bologna Sister City Association. Bologna, Italy is a city of 500,000 people located in north central Italy in the region of Emilia-Romagna. It has the largest intact medieval center in all of Europe. It's famous for its 25 remaining towers out of the 180 or so which used to dot the landscape, plus its 26 miles of arcades, the porticos covering built out over walkways. Bologna's nickname for Bologna is home to what is quite possibly the world's oldest university, founded in 1088. And it currently attracts more than 100,000 students each year. It's an incredibly beautiful university town. Its reputation for exchange programs from around the world is one of the reasons that Portland was first attracted to this sister city relationship. We continue with exchanges with the Università di Bologna and Portland State University and the Oregon Health Sciences Center. We had a recent event honoring Mario Capecchi, a person with Portland roots who won the Nobel Prize in 2007. We broadcast live from Oregon Health Sciences Center to Bologna during his celebration at the European School of Genetic Medicine. Bologna is also known as La Grassa, which means the fat. And it's not because the people are heavy, but because the cuisine is acknowledged as the best, even by the region-centric Italians. Prosciutto, Parmigiano Reggiano, Mortadella, balsamic vinegar all originate in that immediate region. It's another reason that Portland and Bologna are such a suitable match. The attention to local products and the slow food movement really began in that part of Italy. And although exports of food products are very important, the utmost importance to the people around Bologna, Bolognese know that the closer the source, the better. As Portland's only European sister city, there's a true synchronicity between us. Known as Europeans' favorite destination, it's a little off the map for Americans. Portland may also suffer from a little lack of exposure to Europeans. Partially due to this Portland-Bologna connection, formalized in 2003, travelers are catching on to the fact that these places are willing and able to expand their tourism without suffering the trampling of Florence or San Francisco. Thank you very much for your attention today. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Steve Orcutt. I'm president of the Portland Sister City Association. Established in 1959, our relationship with Sapporo is the oldest sister city relationship, certainly for Portland, and the second oldest in the United States. I think Kobe and Seattle beat us to an agreement by a matter of a week or two. Over the years, it's been a strong relationship, encouraging cultural and educational exchange programs. For example, we've had an English oratorical contest delegation coming to Portland from Sapporo for 44 years. Commissioner Fritz has been kind to be at our last several presentations of those speeches, and we certainly appreciate that. A direct relationship from the Portland Sapporo relationship was the Japanese Garden, which was established in the early 1960s. That grew directly out of our newly established sister city relationship. Sapporo has given us a pagoda which is in the garden. They've given us a bell, which is over in front of the convention center. We have given them a Simon Benson fountain for their city. We've given them a Lee Kelly sculpture at the 35th anniversary of our relationship. So it's been a close and active relationship for many years. We expect to continue that. And in 2014, we'll be celebrating a major anniversary, which is the 55th anniversary, when we expect to have the mayor of Sapporo and a delegation visiting Portland. I'm proud to be a part of this organization, and I'm proud that Portland continues to support the sister city relationship. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
One more round of applause.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. Thank you for the time to speak with you. I'm here. My name is Paul Sibley, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Portland Metairie Sister City Association. And as elected officials, having been one, I know that you might be wondering, why should I care about Africa when I'm dealing with a budget, crime issues, and everything else on your plate? But let me tell you that the relationship we have with Metairie in Zimbabwe, in Southern Africa, is one that holds great potential for trade for Portland and its surrounding area. As Zimbabwe emerges into a new leadership and a new entity in the world scene, we believe that there's tremendous potential for forestry cooperation and collaboration, as well as solar, hydro, and other ways that we can cooperate. So there is a trade connection, and I will also talk about the humanitarian connection that we have. For the last 20 years, this organization has been in place raising money with volunteers and nothing but volunteers to fund primarily a school in Zimbabwe, in Mutare, which contains 900 students, 50 of which are dual orphans, that is, no parents whatsoever, many of them dealing with HIV. So our role has been to provide books, electricity. We built a clinic next to the school. We built a pregnant woman's shelter next to the clinic. The many things that it takes to allow students at this poverty level to be able to go to a school and be able to, first of all, to be able to afford to go to school and pay the fees and get the books, but also to be able to keep up the literacy rate, which is an astounding fact in Zimbabwe, still at 90%. So education support is very, very critical. We are on the verge of some new beneficiaries. We're opening up a relationship with a hospice, which is unable to get to many of its clients in the rainy season because the car it owns will not reach through mud roads. So it's a great opportunity for us to expand our relationship as Zimbabwe changes and look forward to, I think, an ever-growing role as we have had over the last 20 years. I would note that the board of the organization, which is all volunteer, is made up of a very wonderful group of diverse individuals. We have a HIV practitioner from OHSU. We have a nurse practitioner working for the county of Multnomah, and she's an HIV specialist. We have a former energy exec give. We have a family that has come here recently and was immigrated from Zimbabwe, and we call them our reality check to make sure that what we're doing is in fact something that is possible and culturally appropriate. So we would love your help in one particular way, and that is our largest fundraiser of the year is December 1st. If you could mark your calendar for World AIDS Day, we will be having a large event. Thanks to Commissioner Fritz for attending this most recent event. We appreciate that greatly. And we hope to get the mayor back from Mutare, and thank you to Mayor Adams for meeting with him when he recently visited here. So we thank you for your support and look forward to collaboration.
Did you say December 6th?
First.
First, thank you.
Thank you very much. Hi, welcome.
Thank you. My name is Stephanie Lamberson, and I am the proud president of the Portland Guadalajara Sister City Association. We were established 29 years ago. We were established as Portland's second sister city. We thought, why should Sapporo have all the fun? And I was just a teenager then, but I remember it well because it was my mom and my stepfather that founded the organization. Mm-hmm. So I have a long history with the group, and our core focus is fostering goodwill and understanding between the two cities. We do this through various educational, business, and cultural exchanges. Our main fundraiser is the Cinco de Mayo event, the Fiesta at Waterfront Park. And I'll just highlight a couple of things that we are so honored to do. One of our events, besides bringing, great food, art, and music to the park, we also provide a really moving naturalization ceremony. And with the partnership of U.S. Citizenship and the Naturalization Office, we are able to welcome and swear in about 50 new Americans from all over the world each year. We've been doing that for over 15 years. The last 20 years, we've been able to bring the world-renowned mariachis from Guadalajara and ballet folklorica dancers to entertain the school children of Portland. Thousands each year come to our event for free school assemblies, and we're able to provide transportation for some of those schools that can't afford it as well. Another program that I'm really proud of that our organization does is the Bombero program. And the Bombero is a Mexican firefighter, and we've been able to, with the help of the city, been able to donate three fire engines, a ladder truck, and over $1 million of life-saving equipment. And their fire fatalities have drastically dropped due to our help and donations. And so
I think it's also worth noting that they pick up the trucks here and the Bomberos drive in I-5 all the way down. so it's and these are trucks and vehicles, as Commissioner Leonard knows, that have reached their useful life limit for us, but in other jurisdictions continue to have utility. So amazing.
Absolutely. And for over 12 years, we've been able to provide firefighter-to-firefighter training as well annually. So, not only are we saving lives, but we are also the Guinness World Record holders this year. At our event, we smashed the Guinness World Record of largest gathering of people wearing sombreros. So, it made national news, and we're proud. So, thanks for having us today.
Hey, bueno. Hi, welcome.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Thomas Benke, and I'm the secretary of the Portland, say it with me, Khabarovsk.
Khabarovsk.
Sister City Association. If you can say Bach, you can say Khabarovsk. Our association's been in existence since 1988. I'll tell you a little bit about Khabarovsk. It is the center now of governance for the Russian Far East, replacing Vladivostok. Vladivostok is more well known to Deepwater Port, militarily important during the Cold War. Why Khabarovsk? Well, there are some changes going on in the Russian Far East that I think that we should be paying attention to for economic reasons, mostly due to the gasification of the region, but also due to increased trade and trade routes with China. They're getting ready to build a bridge across the Amur River. their direct link to China. I don't have time to go into the main list of cultural and academic exchanges that we've had in our association. We're fairly small, we're flying under the radar quite a bit. But I will note something I've been involved with, and that is the environmental projects that have been very important to our two cities. You may recall, and I believe it was in Thanksgiving of 2004, there was a major chemical spill in China that threatened the drinking water supply of our sister city in Khabarovsk. And there was, in fact, no international response to that for various political reasons at our federal level. You might be pleased to know that the city of Portland was the only immediate international response to that disaster. Portland Water Bureau got involved with Commissioner Root's help, as I recall. We sent engineers to Khabarovsk. We sent some special analytical equipment that allowed them to get a very quick turnaround on their water analysis. And as a result, we've created a very, very strong relationship between our two cities' municipal services departments that continues to this day. One of the things I would like to impress upon the council is this, that for some governments and for some of our partners, where they don't have a federal system, where the municipal government really is a branch of the federal government, they have a higher mandate for diplomacy. It's the same mandate that their national government has that we don't necessarily see because of our different system here. And so I'd like for you to keep that difference in mind as you think about these relationships with our sister cities and how we can perhaps reflect the importance of that diplomatic imperative. I firmly believe that the sister city relationships are a great untapped source of commercial development. For instance, with Russia, for us to get our goods, services, and products, particularly our professional services, into that country, China is very similar. We need friends. We need friends who bring us in and allow us to work with them, because market entry, frankly, is a problem for all of us on the West Coast and to Russia. Khabarovsk will preferentially reach out to Portlanders simply because of our long history and the sister city relationship. Provides opportunities for engineering companies and other specialists, particularly in my field, environmental control, to gain some market entry and experience, and it's already creating jobs and bringing revenue into the city. So I would urge that upon you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Thanks. We have one missing one, which is Ashkelon, Israel, today, just so that you're aware. And they've asked Mayor Adams that you read the proclamation to round things off. Do you have it up there?
So the next thing we're doing, is this the one you're going to read? Okay. So the next thing we're doing is reading of the proclamation. Could we have the Prime Minister come forward, please? Have a seat. And anyone else you want to come with you? That would be great. Perfect. So we can get you on TV. I would just say, by way of introduction, the Royal Rosarians maybe are most visible to Portlanders during the Rose Festival months, but your work is year-round. And yesterday afternoon, with the inauguration of the Virgin Air flight, they were absolutely thrilled to be greeted at the bottom of the stairs from the airplane by you all. It was the CEO remarked how his city doesn't have official greeters, and he needs to do something about that. So very pleased to read the following. Whereas the Royal Rosarians were founded 100 years ago, June 7th, 1912, by local business leaders with the purpose of supporting the best interests of the City of Portland, promoting the Rose Festival, encouraging the cultivation of roses, and hosting out-of-town visitors. And whereas the Royal Rosarians are the official ambassadors of goodwill for the City of Portland, proclaiming the rose to be the queen of flowers and Portland the rose capital of the world. And whereas the Royal Rosarians are readily recognized in their distinctive white double-breasted suits and straw hats, a hallmark of pageantry throughout the City of Roses and the Portland Rose Festival. And whereas the Royal Rosarians serve as the royal guard for the mythical realm of Rosaria, that place in everyone's heart that awakens as the storm clouds of winter yield to the golden rays of spring, or the lovely rosebuds begins to blossom into their magnificent glory. And whereas the Royal Rosarians have traveled throughout the world, spreading the word, quote, for you are rose in Portland grows. Whereas the Royal Rosarians are a completely volunteer organization composed of tireless men and women dedicated to extolling the beauty of the rose and performing over 22,000 hours of community service every year. And whereas the Royal Rosarians have recognized distinguished visitors, political and civic leaders, entertainers, military officers, friends of Rosario for their contributions to society with honorary knighthood in the realm of Rosaria. And whereas the Royal Rosarians have planted recognition roses throughout the world to honor particularly worthy people, places, and events. And whereas the Royal Rosarian Foundation supports programs that assist children at risk, provide music scholarships, supports the Washington Park Rose Test Gardens, and honors citizen heroes and heroines at the annual Newsmakers Banquet. And whereas for the past century, the Royal Rosarians have welcomed visiting dignitaries to the City of Roses on behalf of the Mayor and City Council, and whereas the Royal Rosarian Sister City Liaisons provide leadership, friendship, and support to the City of Portland's International Sister City Program, now therefore I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim June 2012 to be Royal Rosarian Month in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this month. Congratulations. Mr. Prime Minister.
Mayor, commissioners, and I'd like to say Knights and Dame of the Realm, and soon to be Knight of the Realm.
Yes.
It's been the privilege of the Royal Rosarians since 1912 to serve the City of Portland and the Portland Rose Festival. And we saw some great examples today with the Sister City program and the greeting we did yesterday for the airlines. It's our pleasure to do that, and we stand ready to serve in any way that the city needs us. We appreciate this proclamation. Thank you very much.
You bet. Let's do a quick picture here with we'll face the audience. Yeah. Council.
100 years in the making.
Congratulations very much. And should I do one picture? Squeeze in a little more. We don't want to miss Commissioner. Still can't quite get everybody.
Who's your letter?
Can you please read the title for resolution item number 665?
Declare city support for the forwarding of a nomination for the Halpern Open Space Sequence to the National Register of Historic Places.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
So I'm going to, before we start, we carried an item over this morning that I've had Firebird folks sitting here for all day. And
I'm going to do them next.
I'm going to do them after this, okay?
Yeah, I won't make them sit through the,
okay,
the long one.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to invite Parks Director Mike Abate, Jeff Joslin, and Bob Nato to come forward and take a seat. And while they're getting organized, I'll read a brief introduction. First, I want to welcome our distinguished guests. The Halpern Conservancy is one of the Parks Bureau's premier partnerships, one of about 115 or so, Mike? That we get close to 120.
120.
Friends and partner groups that we rely on to maintain our gold medal system. Through the generous support of developer John Russell, the dedication of its board, the Conservancy is working hard to improve Pettigrove Park as we speak.
Today we have an opportunity to meet one of the founding commitments the city made when the Conservancy was formed. That is to protect and enhance the treasures that are the fountains and parks of the Halperin open space. Today, Parks is bringing before you a resolution to add our voice of support for the designation of the sequence as a historical
as a historical register
property. On a personal note, I just want to observe that I first learned about the importance of Lawrence Halperin in our community and the sequence when PICA, a number of years ago, did a program that involved Third Angle, PICA, some other folks, and it was a an event that started at the in front of Keller and moved south and ended at the Source Fountain, the smallest of the four. And through that, I and thousands of others were introduced to Lawrence Halperin's masterpiece. And I think for too long it was a well-kept secret that we were home to one of the great masterworks of urban design in the country. And through our action today, we have a chance to take another step forward to protecting it for future generations, and also to thank the Conservancy for taking the steps that they've agreed to take to rehabilitate and maintain this gem. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for what you're doing, and I'm going to turn it over to Mike Abate.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Mr. Mayor and members of council, I'm going to just pass around a book. It's got flags on some pretty interesting historical pictures of the sequence. The sequence is tremendously significant in the urban fabric and the tradition of Portland Parks and Recreation. It marked a major change in the design of public space in Portland. It introduced for the first time the significance of creative and inspirational design in public space, and it raised the bar for all great public space designs in the city, from Pioneer Courthouse Square by Will Martin and Doug Macy, to Director Park by Lori Olin, ZGF, and Mayor Reed, and countless others in between. It literally put Portland on the urban design map worldwide and attracted an entire generation of designers, architects, and landscape architects, including this one. Within Portland Parks and Recreation, the Halperin sequence is unique because it was the first comprehensively designed series of unique public spaces. This created a vision for the then newly developed South Auditorium District. And this precedent was later duplicated by Peter Walker, James Meyer, Jim Cavillage in the concept design for the four parks in the Pearl District. Today, the Halperin sequence of Lovejoy Plaza, Pettigrove Park, Ira Keller Fountain, and the Lincoln Walkways are unique treasures in the Portland Park system, alongside familiar historic sites such as Peninsula Park, Laurelhurst, Pittock Mansion, Washington Park, and Forest Park. Portland Parks and Recreation cannot take care of this treasure alone, and we are wholeheartedly grateful for the work of the Halperin Landscape Conservancy to advocate, fundraise, steward, and document the significance of this amazing series of public spaces. We enthusiastically support the nomination of the Halperin sequence in the National Register of Historic Places. And so I'd like to turn it over to a familiar face, Jeff Joslin, a board member of the Halperin Landscape Conservancy, and then to Bob Nato, also of the Conservancy.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Your Honor. I'm going to begin with the founding of the Conservancy. The Conservancy was founded in 2001, prompted initially by John Russell's identification of the need and opportunity for heightened stewardship of the Halperin open space sequence. The sequence was the result of the vision and leadership of your predecessors, who bravely enabled the design and creation of an urban landscape like no other. As you heard from Director Abate, the result today is universally understood in landscape and urban design cultures as one of the most pioneering, successful, precedental, catalytic urban landscapes of the 20th century. In other words, it's a really good one. To acknowledge its significance and further ensure its protection and enhancement for generations to come, the Conservancy initiated an effort a few years ago to place the sequence on the National Register of Historic Places. Such a designation for this type of historic resource is also pioneering. Your support of the Conservancy is moving forward with this effort will constitute a historic act unto itself. Continuing Council's legacy of vision, leadership, and stewardship, it was initiated with the approvals of this bold design 50 years ago in Council chambers. The nomination is nearly complete thanks to the efforts of many, including most recently and substantially the contributions of Heritage Consulting. This beautifully authored and atypically crafted nomination is a chronicle of the sequence's history, significance, and legacy that, like the sequence itself, will live on in perpetuity. The nomination comes not a minute too early. The sequence does not have a perfect history. The managerial complexities resulting from the multiple agencies and stakeholders involved in the ongoing maintenance of these complex urban features has not been as well choreographed as the renowned dance performances that heralded its ribbon cuttings 40 plus years ago. In the last few years, you've directed your staff and associated agencies to work collaboratively with the Conservancy to more sensitively maintain and improve these masterworks. More recently, we've worked intimately with Portland Parks and Recreation to forward a multitude of funding and improvement efforts. In the past year, Director Abate is personally focused on these efforts, contributing significantly to the momentum of both the Conservancy's and Parks' specific activities and commitments. This progress has borne immediate and profound results. As you heard from Commissioner Fish, following an agreement brokered by the Commissioner between Parks, the Conservancy, and Russell Development, John Russell advanced funding to support the long-deferred maintenance and improvement of Pettigrove, and numerous improvements have already been made. As a result of Conservancy concerns and detailed analyses undertaken by Parks, CH2M Hill has also pledged funding to substantiate and restore the desperately neglected and singularly significant Lovejoy Pavilion. With your support for the Conservancy's moving forward with the National Register nomination, we'll be demonstrating the city's commitment to one of the world's great urban design contributions to the world. Once a National Register landmark, the ongoing stewardship will be further ensured. We welcome your questions, and I humbly request your support of this resolution.
Thank you. Bob, you want to say a few words?
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, I'm actually here wearing multiple hats. Jeff Joslin recruited me to the Halperin Conservancy Board about 2 years ago. I'm now also the chair of the Soma Eco District, which the Halperin Conservancy lies basically in the middle of. And I'm also a property owner. We own what used to be known as the Jade West Building, and I've got my offices there. So I'm in the sequence, walking on those pathways and in those parks every day. And kitty corner from our building is the Lovejoy Fountain. And the first thing I noticed when we bought the building and moved in was that the parks really needed a lot of help. I think among the decisions that you've recently made, the decision to create the Education Urban Renewal District is going to prove to be really important. I think that the investment that's going to go on around those parks is going to bring a lot more interest and prominence to them, and it'll help in our efforts to find the money to put the parks basically back together again. So I want to thank you for all of those things.
Thank you, gentlemen. Questions, Mayor?
No, thanks for your work. It's great. Has anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one else signed up.
Anyone wish to testify on this matter? All right, this is a resolution, so please call the vote.
Fish?
Well, Jeff and Bob and John and all the board members of the Conservancy, thank you. I think it's appropriate to put your work in the context of a number of things that Mike and I are working on right now, and that illustrates one of the simple truths of why we have a great park system, and it is because we have great partners. About a quarter, up to a quarter of the work that maintains our system is donated or raised by private parties, and we have almost 120 friends groups that help us in one way or another manage this great system. And we are particularly encouraged by the relationship with the Conservancy. And we appreciate your patience as we work through some of the difficult issues. Now recently through our budget process, the Council, working with the Portland Development Commission, restored funding for Leech Botanical Garden. The $1.1 million that went into the budget is going to help Leech move forward on a new master plan that this council has supported. But the key component of that is their commitment to leverage the public dollars with private dollars and to use their fundraising capacity to build a world-class botanical garden on the east side. Not long ago, the council authorized the loan agreement, which allowed us to advance some funds to the Oregon Rail Heritage Foundation, which wanted to build a new home for the three steam locomotives that we inherited in 1958, and that until recently lost their home. The shell of that building has now gone up on the backside of OMSI, and ORF has raised over $4 million towards that project. The city could not possibly do that without a strong partner. Later today, we're going to hear from the Goldberg family about Harper's Playground, a playground which takes the inclusive playground model and takes it to the very highest level and will become a national model for playgrounds that are accessible to all children. The Goldbergs and their partners have raised over $400,000, close to $500,000, towards the vision of that playground. The city simply could not do that without their great work. And then soon, we'll be getting a presentation at Council on summer free-for-all. This year, the direct and in-kind contributions to the city total $1.5 million and allow us to offer concerts and movies, rock climbs, and other amenities all summer long at no cost to the people of Portland. And we expect between 400,000 and 450,000 people to partake in those programs. This is the core of what allows us to have a gold medal system. And what you gentlemen have proposed through the Conservancy to restore the greatness of one of the great works, masterworks of 20th century design, which we believe in turn that the Urban Renewal District and the mayor's decision to create a fountain district and all the intentional planning which will follow will help us revitalize and grow the South Auditorium District is just splendid. So as Parks Commissioner, I want to thank you deeply for your work, and I'm very proud to support this resolution. Aye.
Leonard?
Thank you for your work.
Fritz.
Thank you also for your work, and Commissioner Fish for bringing this designation. These open spaces are part of what makes Portland special, and it's important for us to make sure that they're there for generations to come. Aye.
Adams?
Well, when I first moved to Portland, it took me years to figure out that it was a sequence. And just when I thought that I had, like, seen the two sequences or the two sort of related works of public art, I thought I'd figured out, and then I would come across the next one, and finally I've sort of discovered them all. But your work has been absolutely invaluable, and I'm pleased to help forward this on. Thank you, Commissioner Fish, for your leadership in this area. Aye. All right, can we take up the item that we pulled from consent? Commissioner Saltzman will not be joining us this afternoon.
That is item, if I could have
645.
Item 645.
I can read the title.
Okay.
Authorize a contract and provide for payment for Fire Station 21 boathouses.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
I'll turn this over to Connie.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Connie Johnson. I'm the facilities project manager for the Station 21 project. I'm asked to pull the ordinance this morning in order to amend it, changing the cost from $583,000 to $801,517, and correcting a mistake on page 2 of the financial impact statement, changing the confidence level from high to low to match the ordinance language. The $583,000 was an earlier estimate. At the time the ordinance process began, we're moving forward quickly with the design to meet the in-water work window for this year, and we have a more accurate estimate from the architect as of a couple days ago, and it's based on a better defined design. However, the confidence level will still be low until we get a cost estimate from a cost estimator at the end of design development. So
I move the substitution.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Carla, unless there's discussion, Carla, can you call the vote on the motion?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Motion approved.
So does this move to Second reading?
It's an emergency.
So we have to vote on again. So before, I'm going to take this opportunity, I'm going to, on a related topic, pass out copies of emails each of you have received from me. This one, the latest one, dated April 26th of this year. If you'll recall, there has been an ongoing discussion beginning, I think I've referenced it here in the email, in beginning on June 9th, 2010, a series of emails between Commissioner Saltzman and I, which also has led to, and that was prior to the passage of the bond. After the passage of the bond on April 25th, Commissioner Saltzman again raised the issue of what the development of Fire Station 21's north property would be, that is now used as a parking lot. To refresh your memory, independent of us going to the voters to approve a bond to build this fire station about 2 years ago, there was a decision to move the fallen firefighters memorial from West Burnside and 17th to this same location. Subsequent to that decision, it was decided to go to the voters to replace the fire station that's there because it sits virtually just on top of fill, and in a seismic event would undoubtedly slide into the river. So the station needs to be seismically upgraded and modernized. And of course, this fire station being on the east end of the Hawthorne Bridge, located on the Esplanade, requires a degree of design that's probably unique for a building, particularly a fire station, given its visibility from the west side of the Willamette River, given its place on the Esplanade. The discussion has basically been from Commissioner Saltzman, and I'm sorry he's not here. I expect him to be here for part of this, for this part of the discussion this afternoon. But the discussion has been he does not want this public bond money used to purchase anything that's specific to the memorial. I have repeatedly agreed to that, and if you'll look at the email, the latest email, including where I've cited other emails publicly here, I said, and it's on page 3, I've double-lined it for you so you can see it in the printout I just gave you, that and this is a quote, I believe it is clear from my 2010 emails, the bond would include designing and constructing an open space that would be compatible with the memorial. As I said today, it has been my intent that any design features specific to the memorial, such as the wall with the fallen firefighters' names, who died in line of duty and the stone etched in the David Campbell, would not be paid for by bond funds. We continue to be clear about that. One of the issues with this vacant area is that we have a geotech report that the architects have told me they've received that this area that's now used as a parking lot actually drains into the bank and into the Willamette River, and that drainage can undercut the bank and cause future seismic slides of the bank into the river. So the site needs to be excavated. It needs to be redesigned so it doesn't drain in the area that that causes erosion to the bank and possibly instability to the station and the boathouses in the river. The reason I raise this today is independent of these emails and these discussions, Commissioner Saltzman has privately met with the project manager and others to tell them he wants nothing done to that site at all, meaning no construction, nothing. I have countermanded that message from Commissioner Saltzman as soon as I discovered that he had said that, and I wanted to be clear publicly that I had done so and why. It has created confusion amongst the project team, the architects, and those permitting entities who we are working with to facilitate this project as quickly as we can. We have a window of opportunity to do the in-water work that began on June 1st and expires on October 31st. You cannot do in-water work, that is, driving piles and building the new dock that will accommodate the fireboat that will go there outside of that date range. This intrusion into this project and these mixed messages are causing my team to be confused and to therefore to send confusing messages to the permitting staff and slow down the project. I think I have fixed that. by taking a variety of actions, and I think the fire chief now is on top of that. We've figured out what's wrong, but I certainly wanted to make sure the council heard that, and if there is any desire to discuss this further here or in any other form in the future, as I've always been, I'm open to respond to emails, have a work session, have any kind of public discussion, but the project is back on track in the direction that I think I've made clear with this email and other discussions we've had here at council.
Okay. Appreciate that. Do you have any comments, questions?
I do have a question for staff. Thank you. Could you say again why the confidence level is low for the 800,000?
Because we're just in design development right now, and confidence level usually doesn't move too high until the end of contract documents. And then everything's been well-defined and all the systems known and that sort of thing, and we're not there yet.
So is there a maximum that it can go up to before you'd come back to council? Is it the 25% as usual?
Well, we do have a budget that we have to stay within, so that's going to definitely hide some limits.
And this is one of the last projects on the bond measure, is that correct? No,
this is the new.
Okay, so there's no particular parameters allocated for this particular
We really want to keep, other than our desire to keep it within that dollar amount. We there are several different components, different procurements, and the boathouses is one, and dock and pilings is another, and then the upland work is the third one. And so we have sort of mini budgets for each one.
So every dollar we spend on this boathouse is one more dollar that can't go to the fires.
Right.
So there is a tremendous tremendous pressure to get this done. Again, this boathouse is going to be on the water below the Hawthorne Bridge, and clearly visible. I mean, a major icon, if you will. As one is walking along the Esplanade on the west side by the Rose Festival Hotel, this will be nothing else to refer to it as an icon. It has to be designed correctly. Having said that, whatever we spend on it, another dollar that can't go to the actual construction of the fire station. So there's a tremendous amount of internal will and desire to make sure this gets done right and looks good and the city is proud of it, but also it's done as efficiently as possible, because we're having a real struggle as we have identified some of these seismic issues, including the slope of the open space that now we didn't have in the original estimate that we have to correct, all of which costs money and has to be within the budget of the bond.
It's a very challenging site.
It's a very challenging.
Is there a total budget for the fire station plus boathouse allocated in the bond measure?
Yes, right now the construction for the fire station is like 4.9. We're keeping the boathouse and dock and pilings under.
And does this come back to council at all?
Each one of the procurements you'll probably be updated on as we the CMGC process. Remember, we were here
right
about a month ago or something on that, and then the dock and pilings will be a design bid build process. So we'll be asking to set money aside.
That works. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry, spell it out there.
And thank you all for being patient. Being all
yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
This is an emergency ordinance?
Yes.
So are we going to take this to a vote today?
Yes.
Yes. I call the motion.
Sorry, I'm a bit distracted. Does anyone wish to testify in this matter? All right. Carla, can you please call the vote?
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you for answering all my questions, and I also thank Caitlin, Lily, and my office for digging into this. Aye.
Adams?
Well, this is amazing. I mean, this was... not only did you take on a very difficult task of going to the voters for making improvements to the equipment that our firefighters have and our rescue units have to prevent fires, save lives, but then you also took on the task of fundraising and everything else related to the memorial. Then you chose one of the hardest sites in the city to work in. If I didn't know better, I would say that you're a glutton for punishment.
And Commissioner Salzman appreciates all of that.
So I just don't want it to you make it look too easy, and I just didn't want the moment to pass without thanking you and recognizing you for another step along the way, and to thank all of you for your continuing great work.